we have to start disidentifying so completely with these ideas of what is and isn't, and also anchor into these kind of like, okay, there is a structure here. There is a structure of masculine or feminine, but it's not necessarily like, this is how I must be. But if we don't have the tolerance for complexity and the tolerance for navigation, sometimes what we want to do is like, oh, that's too much. Can I go back to somewhere where the rules are more defined and I don't have to think so much? I don't have to deal with the variance of complexity. And that can make sense, but it's not an evolutionary process. That can be a regression to support the overwhelm by what's actually occurring.
Yo, 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 lovers. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Sex, Love, and Everything in Between. We're the O'Neills. You're here with Megan Jacob.
And this is the place we have really uncensored conversations about sex, intimacy, and relationships. We're super excited you're here. Enjoy this episode.
Hey, lovers. Hey, my love.
Hi.
We've got a guest on here today.
We do, and we're really excited.
We're really excited. Everyone, we would like to introduce you to Damien Bowler. Welcome, brother.
Hey.
Yay.
Hey,
everyone.
Before we jump in, man, I just want to share how I came across your work. I have quite a few friends on Facebook, and all of a sudden these posts kept showing up on my feed and people were sharing them. And it was, you know, when someone shares a post and you only see the first little bit of it, you don't actually see all of the content. I kept seeing these posts and I was like, what? There's no trendy call to action or quick like attention grab here. And I ended up clicking on some of your posts and I started to read them, and instantly I felt the word that came to me was like nourished. Like I was being nourished by your content. And this is something that I believe is missing on a lot of the platforms, especially in this day and age with TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook really just being these attempts to get your attention for as little time as possible and get you to sort of get sucked into the algorithm and start consuming like loads and loads of content in small bite-sized pieces. So when I started to read your content, instantly I felt nourished and I was like, oh, this is a man who is not just buying into the story that he has to create content for the sake of creating content. This feels like a piece of art. It feels like he's giving his heart to this, to what he's creating. And not only that, man, like the topics that you speak to are really deeply, deeply important to both Meg and I. It's been massive for our relationship to deepen into the topics that you talk about, in particular polarity and then the energetics of it, man. So as soon as I saw that, I ran into Meg and I said, hey, would you be cool if we got this guy Damien on the podcast? I was like, I don't know him, and she's like, I've read some of his posts. They're incredible. Mm. And I was like, perfect. Like we're wanting to get people in that are really passionate about this work. And one of the things that we have for guests on this podcast is we have to be a fuck yes to having them on. We have to be like, we're excited to speak to them. Mm. So bro, welcome. And thank you for what you give to the world.
Mm, thank you so much for having me. I love hearing that. I've definitely gone through the period of trying to produce content and it hurts inside and my engagement goes down. And so now I write when there's something that's alive inside of me, and that's how I used to, and I've gone back to that and I trust that. So I don't write every day. I try and write when there's something real. You know, I wrote a post that I put out yesterday that's having a lot of engagement, but I've been sitting on it for like 2 weeks. It's been percolating inside of me before I was ready to write it.
Yes.
I love that. It hurts inside when I
when I try and force content out, I'm like, oh, like I'm like starting to feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things, because yeah, I came across your work. I think I started following you or being friends with you on Facebook like a few years ago, and I'm hardly ever on Facebook. And when I am, there's maybe like one or two people that I actually intentionally like sit and be with their posts, and your work is one of them. And I think in the world, because you are such an incredible teacher on the work of polarity and the energetics of polarity, and I think there is so much out there on that topic. We were just discussing this before we hit record, that so much either can be really surface level and there's no nuance and it's so like black and white and just like the masculine is leadership, the feminine is surrender, and that is it. And there's just like no nuance or no depth. Or the other thing I see a lot in the polarity space is just like it being taken very dogmatically. Mm-hmm. And what I love about it, your work, is you bring such depth and such nuance to this whole topic. So my first question, and I would love to hear more about, like, what is the essence of polarity for you, and why do you feel that it can just really deeply transform a relationship?
So the thing that I think about when I think of polarity, it's like, I like to go all the way up to the top and all the way down to the bottom. I kind of like to look at it from both levels. And at the top, it's like, we live in a dualistic universe, right? So there's always duality. So polarity is essentially an expression of duality. There is, you know, at the ultimate level, there's consciousness and there's matter. You know, we are a being that is made of material atoms, and then we have something that's animating that with consciousness, right? And that's kind of the absolute of polarity, right? But we don't actually exist as either of those things. We exist as a kind of a union of those two things. We exist as a union of consciousness and matter. And I think of, when we bring polarity all the way down to the level of relationships, we're enacting that, but we're enacting it between two beings rather than inside of one being. So we're enacting kind of a universal paradigm in the context of a relationship. And ultimately, I think this interplay between consciousness and matter, this interplay between masculine and feminine, between two oppositional things, creates everything. Everything that we know is created. So it's a creative potential. There's a creative, when you bring two things that are seemingly opposite, but they're complementary to each other, we have creative potential. We also have destructive potential too, right? So polarity can be creative or destructive depending on what kind of polarity is enacted. And so the essence of polarity for me is, how do we find reciprocal complementary opposites and enact them together to create energy? And the most common energy that we think of in polarity is erotic energy, sexual chemistry, and romantic energy, and also love. These are the kind of relational polarities, that relational energies that come out of polarity. But I don't think we're limited to that. It's like, if you get an interplay between, you know, the two of you are working together, right? And the more your synergy works together, and you probably play out different functions in the business, you create the potential for abundance, right? Which is actually the play out of two complementary things working together to create more than exists on its own.
I love that.
Yeah, that's like that. I love that, zooming right out and then zooming right in and looking at it from both of those lenses, because, yeah, the energetics of polarity has always been the piece that's pulled me, having like a really body-based style of living and feeling my way through life. Like, that just is like, of course. Of course that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you... Yeah, What would you say for someone that is new to polarity, that wants to integrate this or start to attune? Because I guess this is an energetic that's always either playing out, or maybe it hasn't quite been tapped into. But what would you suggest people do to begin to attune to that within a relationship?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because like we were talking about before, there is... And you were mentioning in the intro to it, there's like a lot of dogma or rigidity around polarity. Men should be masculine and they need to behave like this, and women should be feminine and they need to behave like this, and that's what's going to work. And it's like, I don't really see it the same way. It's more like, we want to play out complementary reciprocal opposites for the sake of generating energy. And it doesn't matter that much what is played out where, but what matters is, what feels true to our essential nature? That's actually the thing that matters more than, like, I should be like this because I'm a man. Well, as men and women, we're on developmental journeys, and part of that journey, moving towards a more integrated perspective for men, is like learning to touch into their feminine essence, which is why a lot of men's work is like learning how to feel and feel emotions and everything, which is what we would associate with more feminine. And then we have the other side, a lot of women who are gaining independence from the masculine and learning how to do autonomy and kind of make it in the world without, in the material world, without support from the masculine. And it's like, well, if you're in that stage, the polarity is a little bit different than if you're kind of before or after that stage. So it really depends on where we are in our journey of how it's going to play out. I find that the people, at least where I'm trying to speak to, and the people who are drawn to me, I'm more interested in the integrated level, or an integral level of consciousness, which means that we've got to a point where, as a man, I've kind of done the emotional journey. And then there's something that's gone like, oh, actually, I'm in a male body and I want to connect with the essence of masculinity more strongly. Mm-hmm. Like actually stoicism and goal determination and linear thinking is actually feels better in my body than being a bit more free flowing and emotional and softer and receptive to life. And it's not that either one is right or wrong. That just feels better. And then my partner or the women that are drawn are on the other side. It's like they've kind of, you know, my partner, she was very successful. She ran her own business and, you know, had that kind of thing dialed in. And then we got into a relationship and I was quite soft and emotional and like, and then we're like, actually, we want something else. So we've been in this journey ourselves of like kind of polarizing into those opposite places. You know, for her, it was like the business falling apart and like kind of letting go into a different kind of way of being. I see you've had a similar journey. Yeah. Right. And so there's this recalibration. And so, when you say, where do you start? It's like to take stock of where are we in our journey and what's important. If I'm as a man and I'm like, actually, it's really important for me to explore my emotional landscape. Cool. But recognize the reciprocal to me is probably a woman who is more interested in kind of getting shit done, right? Mm. And same with a woman. If a woman is really interested in getting shit done, the reciprocal is probably a man who's a bit softer and not so interested in that. That's the polarity. Or if we're integrating out of that, it's like, okay, I'm learning as a woman I want to go back into my feminine. Well, it's like a man who's going, well, I want to like figure out what it's like to be more masculine is a great match. So it's like, where to start is to assess where am I on my journey and what's important? What is my essence calling me to experience?
I love that because we had such a similar journey. Like at the beginning, we've been together almost 10 years now. And at the beginning, I was very just like goal oriented and this is where I'm going. And Jacob was so free flowing, but I was so attracted to that. Mm-hmm. Like he worked in this fruit and veg store. I used to go in and he would just be juggling the fruit and I'd be like, oh my God, you have no care in the world. Like I was so attracted to that. And now the idea of like, if I was single and to be out in the world, that energetic of a man would not be drawn or attracted to that at all. But we were probably 5 years into our relationship where I call it like I descended into my body and had this real feminine awakening. And it was like literally this switch flicked. And I was like, oh, like Jacob was a real nice guy and used to just like say yes a lot and just kind of go along with wherever I wanted to take us. And it was just like this part of me was suddenly like, oh, I do not want that anymore. In fact, that's almost repulsive to this newer part of me. And that was where it's like I didn't even realize this part of there was a desire in me for leadership or direction or like the like strength of a man's yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that just like came alive in me. And that was such a huge moment for our relationship too.
Yeah. And what I took from what you just said there as well, bro, was like, it's an evolution.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily like, okay, you're now feminine, I'm now masculine and we instantly do the opposite. Right. Mm-hmm. I think what I'm hearing is this evolution takes time and patience. And that's where the word devotion really comes into me. It's like, am I devoted to the path that is revealing itself to both of us?
Mm.
And that can be a really vulnerable place to be. I know for me it was because I was like, oh, I've been doing all of the right things.
Mm.
And then it's like, well, you want something else now? And then it took a while for me to like understand once I read Intimate Communion by David Deida, I was like, oh, okay. Now I've got a framework or a structure to a concept to, I guess, apply to my life and take stock and look at where I'm at. And when I did start to feel into it, I was like, you know what? This masculine stuff actually feels really good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, being direct and going out and being assertive and having a vision, all of this stuff is starting to feel really alive in me.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, like, regardless of whether our relationship survived or didn't at that moment, it was such a gift because it gave me access to the next stage of my personal journey.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. Same for me. It's like I lived most of my life kind of avoiding work and didn't really like responsibility, never had much money, you know. And then as we got into this relationship and things started clicking in, it's like I stepped into a place of suddenly like, I want to provide. I want to pay for everything. And it like, and it felt so good. I was like, it started stepping in. I was like, oh my God, this feels good. And for her, it was like a calibration as well of like, okay, like I want this. And then I have to learn to receive it, you know, as well. And there's this like, whoa, we're doing this thing that is actually changing the entire structure of how we relate to each other. And I love what you said about an evolution, because I do think there is this constant navigation and negotiation. And I say the word negotiation not as in we like sit down and we try and figure out all the details, but we're always like kind of, you know, balancing, and we're always hitting the edges, which are our challenges, and kind of having to like, okay, what's the deeper level? Where do I need to grow? How do I need to expand? What needs to heal? And we're in this constant like path of unfolding. And, you know, we don't have to go here, but I just want to put it out there as well. I don't even think that the masculine feminine that we're kind of understanding is the end point. I actually think that as we continue to evolve, that will become even more amorphous. And I don't know what the next thing is, but I can feel the sense of like, the idea of masculine feminine drops away and becomes more and more of just a construct, and we become a like a being that doesn't really like true transgender, not meaning that I change my gender, but I actually have no identification with gender. It's not really, it's a vehicle rather than an identity. So that's just a bigger North Star on the on the picture to kind of like paint out the spread that's available here.
That idea of like that, where that, like even that to me, like I'm like, oh, that feels a bit too fucking much.
Yeah, it's a bit far, right? You know,
that's but what I'm hearing in that is like there is such an identification, I guess, movement right now, especially online. What I've noticed is like a lot of guys are like, well, we're gonna double down on rigidity, and we're gonna work this out, and we're gonna come up with the optimal structure that's gonna serve us, and it becomes once again this idea of creating another structure that doesn't have the opening for evolution, or it doesn't have, and this is in Native American culture, their circle has 13 points. It's not a perfect circle. It's actually a fractured circle. So when they look at the circle, they're looking at it on from a, like a, an aerial point of view, and the circle actually has a fraction. It's that's where the energy comes and goes, and it actually reveals the spiral. And that's what I'm hearing is like, oh, like we can use this as a construct, but we're going to continually want to evolve and transform. That's right. The natural tendency of consciousness.
Well, and I think the moment we go into rigidity and dogma, absolutes, this is how it is, we're actually in a regression. Mm-hmm. I mean, depending on where we are in our developmental journey, for a child, that's actually really important to actually go into kind of absolutes and constructs, you know, and like this is how the world works and this is how it doesn't. Like that's actually a really important developmental step that children need to go through, and that humanity has had to go through at times. When the church started dominating the earth and we had very strong ideas of right and wrong, was actually in response to the absolute utter chaos of the world, where warlords and tribes were ransacking each other's villages. They came in and law and order started to go, right, this is how the world needs to work. And I think that as the world is becoming more complex, it's like we either have to meet that by becoming more complex, which means that we have to start disidentifying so completely with these ideas of what is and isn't, and also anchor into these kind of like, okay, there is a structure here. There is a structure of masculine or feminine, but it's not necessarily like, this is how I must be. But if we don't have the tolerance for complexity and the tolerance for navigation, sometimes what we want to do is like, oh, that's too much. Can I go back to somewhere where the rules are more defined and I don't have to think so much? I don't have to deal with the variance of complexity. And that can make sense, but it's not an evolutionary process. That can be a regression to support the overwhelm by what's actually occurring.
I love that so much, because I think even in our journey, there was a time where really understanding in almost a black and white way, the masculine and the feminine and those kind of energetics, that was like mind blowing to me at the time. So having such a structure and these concepts to play with and try on in our bodies and our relationship was so powerful. And now, you know, I think our relationship is polarized, but we're not conscious about that.
Yeah.
We're not thinking you're in the masculine, so now I'm in the feminine, or I need to be more feminine. So it's what we always talk about is like trusting the truth of the moment and just being attuned to the energy in our own bodies and not having this like, okay, it has to be filtered through the lens of polarity and that all the knowledge that I have around that. But I think the knowledge and the concepts have to come first to be able to then have that depth of attunement.
Totally. Right? That gives us the landscape of distinctions that we can go, okay, I can actually understand what's happening. But one of the, you know, which can be really beneficial. But if we hold on to that, one of the worst things we can do for a relationship is like, you're not being feminine right now. You're not being masculine. We start doing that to each other, you're just going to hurt each other.
I wanted to bring that up so bad because I see this so much in the women I work with, especially. It's like weaponizing these concepts and using it as this like, you're not being masculine enough.
I'm out of control because you're not being masculine enough and holding me or containing me.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm going to shirk all my responsibility for my own maturity and emotional maturity and make it your fault.
Totally. And there is this such a when we are playing in these dynamics, like there has to be such a level of responsibility of what we're bringing. And I love in your work, you speak about that of like being so aware of what we are embodying and knowing that we are going to be attracting the opposite of that and like taking ownership of that and being aware.
They're always a match, you know, in some way, even if they're a match to our dysfunctional, unintegrated shadows. And we think like, I'm better than that, but I am attracting someone who has these abusive patterns or has really like, they're not developed enough or they're not meeting me. Some part of me is still matching that. Maybe I call it effacement. Maybe I have self-esteem issues and I don't believe that I'm worthy of meeting someone else. So that self-esteem, low self-esteem part of me is attracted to that. And that's what I'm going to play out. It's not their fault. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And until we actually start doing that, then we're a victim to life. If I don't take responsibility for the quality of my own experience and the quality of my relationships and interactions, I'm a victim. It's as simple as that. I am a victim. Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, that word responsibility is a really important one when we're bringing in concepts.
Absolutely.
And the thing that I coach predominantly men. Every now and then, Meg and I will run a relationship course, and that's where I'll get the chance to speak to women. But what I'm really careful of with men is I give them polarity on a very broad, general platter. So I speak about nature and the way polarity dances in nature, so they don't get so like, well, men are this and women are this. So if I do this, then she's going to do that for me. And that expectation kind of driven formula, really, like what you said, it becomes around, oh, how do I get what I want? Rather, how can I take responsibility for what you said, the quality of my life and the quality of my relationship? So I always love it's great to have a concept, but you have to be responsible in the way that you bring it into your life.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Go.
I was just going to say, there's one of your recent posts that I want to read and I would love to deepen into, but is there anything else
I feel like we've covered polarity in a really big way.
Okay, this was a few days ago. You wrote, dominance becomes benevolence at its highest frequency. That's the energy the feminine is truly craving, power in service of her. I'm obsessed with that so much.
If I would edit it, I would edit it and say in service with her. That would be one change that I'd make to it. But yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I would love you to deepen into that because I think this is such a, again, if we're looking at it, you know, I see some people trying to use these concepts of polarity, but I believe it truly needs to come with the intention of love. Mm-hmm. Or like if the foundation of love isn't there, if the foundation of consciousness isn't there, you know, that it's not truly, it is just going to be dominance, right? And so I would love you to just speak into,
totally.
Deeper into that.
Dominance is such a interesting and tricky word because it's immediately polarizing. You know, some people love it and love the concept and the energy because they can, there's something in it that feels really right.
Yeah.
But there's also something in it that feels really wrong. So it's kind of like, it's got this strange energy. And whenever I write about dominance, I always get a polarized. I get some people love it and some people are like, warning flags, abuse, you know, like this is bad stuff, trauma response, et cetera, et cetera. And I've been really trying hard to find, English language doesn't have a word that really encapsulates what actually is the beneficial quality of that, because there is something in it. You know, the more a woman goes into a feminine, I've seen, the more she actually drops into the feminine parts of herself, the more she craves a certain quality of energy that we often call dominance. She mm-hmm. loves to be taken, right? And ravished and held and pinned down and led and just taken, basically taken out, like, so deeply into experience that she kind of forgets herself. That's the, mm-hmm. that's the desire. I like the, you know, if we go into the absolutes again, consciousness and matter, or consciousness and experience, that which is witnessing and that which is experiencing, the feminine essence is to be the experience, you know, and often the feminine desire is to just be the experience and nothing else. In the depths of orgasm, there is nothing. There is just orgasm. There's no identity. There's no consciousness observing it. There's just pure orgasm, right? Mm. And the masculine side is like pure consciousness, just witnessing. Like, and Data talks about this a lot as well. You get the masculine and like sit and stare at a wall until there's nothing but presence for everything, but there's no movement, right? There's just pure stillness or presence. So I've been trying to find a word to encapsulate it, because we don't want the trauma response to that. Yes, in kink scenes and BDSM, you can get a flavor of that energy. You know, you tie a woman is tied up, or like, you know, with sensation play or something like that, she gets that level of surrender. But that can also be very much open to abusive energies, tyrannical energies. A man who is unchecked, you know, not connected to his heart, can turn dominance into tyranny. And we have, you know, I love thinking about movies. There's lots of movies that encapsulate that. Casino, Scarface, you know, Wolf of Wall Street. There's like these movies where men take that to the extreme and they end up in tyrannical expressions, attempting to bring that energy. So benevolence is the best word that I come up. It's not really the right word. It's not really the right definition. If we were going to look at it as a dictionary definition, it's not really quite there. But where we're drawing that from, my partner and I, like, we play with this a lot, is one of the frameworks we love to use is the gene keys. So and what's beautiful about the gene keys is it's actually a kind of a take on the I Ching, which is this expression of 64 different aspects of existence, right? And it's, I don't have to go into too much technical details, but it exists. It's based on a binary system, ones and zeros, which is our computers, which is our DNA, which is a 64-bit system, which actually functions right throughout the universe. So there's something very real about it. Mm. And one of the gene keys has the shadow of dominance. And in that gene key, the gene keys is beautiful because it adds a frequency to the I Ching. It gives us a shadow, a gift, and a city, which is like a truncated version of like David Hawkins' Power versus Force, which is like a much more expanded version of the frequency of consciousness that's available. It's kind of like three broad brackets. Of course, we can graduate that into more and more finer, you know, refinements. And we have a word for each level. And my partner has been developing an oracle deck based on the gene key. So we've been playing with some of the words. We've been redoing some of the words because we want to bring in more of an intimacy lens. And in the Jin Keys, it's Jin Key 45, which in the I Ching and the human design is really related to king energy, king and queen energy. Mm. It's so the shadow is dominance, and in Jin Keys, the gift is synergy, and the city or the highest realized is communion. But we've been playing with the idea of benevolence being that, being the word to represent that better, because it feels like a power in service of, right? So the frequency of dominance, that ability to take a woman or take the feminine or take experience so deeply into it, but in service with attunement, with heart, with like, this is actually going to create more, you know, this is in more abundance. So that's really what I'm thinking of with that word. I want to like, how do we retain the gritty, the hot stuff that's in the dominance, right? You know, it's like even your facial expressions, like, you know, women will go, yes, like more they're in their feminine. They're like, I know that energy and I want it, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't want to be abused, you know, but I want the energy. So how do we do that? It's like we connect the heart, you know, for men, the heart to the balls, right? And we have that power that's filled with love and filled with service. Yeah.
I love that distinction so much, because even when and I love that you said the more a woman, you know, drops into her feminine or activates and allows that energy to come through, the more she can feel that desire of like, fucking take me.
Yeah.
And when you're in that energy of dominance, I can tell, even though you feel a power, in your dominance and you get to activate a part of yourself, it's not, I'm doing this just to get off on being dominant. It's like, I'm activating this part of me so I can help you, so I can take you to the place I know you really want to go. And that when you say like in service with her or in service to her, like that is, and when a woman is deeply connected to her feminine, she is so attuned, you know, she can taste, whether that energy is there or whether it's not.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. The word benevolence just feels right in the body.
You can feel it, right? It's like, oh, it's like power, but I'm like loving and soft at the same time.
Yeah. It doesn't have an urgency to it. Yeah, at all. And the archetypes, and I love movies, like movies. I love watching the archetypal story of all of the characters, but the dominance, or if you look at the king and the tyrant, like I never really had, I kind of lost that dominating energy through my childhood due to things that happened to me. And I never really had a dominant energy at all. I was very much more passive, or what was what they call the weakling.
Yeah, me too.
And that was really hard for me to understand that the dominant energy was a flavor that the feminine craved. I just did not get it.
When we live in a culture that like simultaneously demonizes and wants it at the same time. So as young men, we grow up really twisted, you know, depending on what cultural narrative and what our parents and our schooling is like, we'll either go one direction or the other. One direction is like, you know, the tyrant, and the other direction is like, oh no, don't have and we don't have a lot of, not even role modeling, almost like calling in the culture out of that. It's like either like, yes, you can get ahead by stepping on everyone, you know, you just walk over the backs of everyone to get ahead, or you be a good person and you don't do any of that.
Yeah. One or the other.
Yeah. One or the other.
Mm.
But we do have, you know, Braveheart comes to mind as one example of that, that kind of benevolent energy. And we love, Katie and I also love watching movies and pointing that out. It's like, oh yeah, you can feel when the masculine is in that benevolent energy. He's like strong, but it's like he cares about everyone. It's like he'll take charge, but that's because he's protecting all the people that are around him. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing? I have this saying that I remind myself, because I'm coming to a season of wanting to dominate in my work, and I really want to fuck the shit out of life. I want to really birth some things and create some things. And that's the energy. And it's creating some, you know, some tension in our relationship as we find the next chapter, we write the next chapter. But one of the things that I tell myself is like, the fiercest warrior wears no armor. And when I think of Braveheart, or I think of Achilles, it's like these guys they weren't wearing bulky big head. They weren't protecting themselves. They weren't rigid. They were fluid. And when their time came to die, they died with grace.
Yeah.
They died with almost that benevolence.
Yeah. And it's like, I think about that and I love that analogy. And there was like a fearlessness, and it's not fearlessness. It's like, I am not scared to die. It's more like, I know what I'm fighting for. So I'm not scared of dying for this, because I know what it's for. I know what it's in service of. I think about Braveheart, and he was just absolutely dedicated to his mission, to what he's in service of, which is the liberation of his people. And it's like, it doesn't matter if I die, because I'm dying doing something good.
Yeah, that's such, when you talk about the masculine, like that just feels right. You know, I always looked to those figures in movies. I'm so impressionable when I watch a movie, and I'm like, I need to wear a kilt. When I was pregnant, I was like, I need a kilt. I need to blue pack. I was like, I want to emanate that energy.
Yeah.
And for me to actually go on that journey, it looked very different. It was like, I had to actually get in touch with what I was here to fight for. And I had to learn, you know, for me to actually like cultivate the capacity to be dominant, I had to really dig deep to find what it is that I'm here to do.
Yeah.
So that when you say that, you know, I think circling right back to that idea of like with her, it's like, well, for me now, like I want a family, and I'm like, what is this in service to? It's in service to not just for her, for me, it's for what life is asking of me.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I totally hear that. And then same thing about the family. It's like, okay, well now work and business and money takes on an entirely different meaning. And I'm like more dedicated and committed and ruthless towards it. Ruthless in a good kind of way, not in a like, I'll do whatever I can, but just like that determined, because this is what it's in service of.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would love to hear, and I would love to hear from both of you in this. How does it serve a man, or how does it shift how he shows up in intimacy with a woman or with the feminine when he's activated this part of himself, when that he's activated that warrior or that benevolent leader? Like, how does that then shift his ability to hold a woman, meet her, navigate life alongside her?
It's a good question. I'm just feeling into it. It's like, I don't always have it 100% of the time. You know, there are times where I drop out of it, but when I'm in it, the word that comes to mind is like, it's almost effortless. The more I'm in that energy, the more effortless it is. It's like, to meet her is an effortless experience. I know what to do. I know how to meet her. I know how to make her smile. I know how to make her come. I know how to do anything. Like, it's not an issue. Like, I can, if she's in a grumpy mood, I can turn her into a bright mood if I want to, you know? I can handle anything that comes our way. It's just kind of that. There's like a, and to come back to the dominance to benevolence, and one more feature that I realize I missed as I kind of got carried away with the story, is I think that the deepest quality that the feminine craves in that I want to carry all the way through is a level of self-assuredness in the masculine. Ooh. That's the thing, right? It's actually a thing, because the dominant energy is because he's so self-assured that he knows what he's doing. Like, he's not afraid of being rejected. He's not afraid of something like, not, there's no timidity. It's just like, I know this is right. And when there's benevolence, I know this is right because it's, my heart tells me this is in service. So it's not for me to get my ego gratification or get my rocks off. It's like, I know this is going to create more. This is going to create more love in you, more pleasure in you. This is going to create, which is going to create more upliftment in me, which is then going to spiral upwards. It's like, I can feel that. So there's a level of self-assuredness. And the more that energy like sits and runs through my nervous system and my cells, it's like the more effortless relating is, the more effortless the interactions are, the more effortless I am in business, the more effortless I am in handling anything that needs to happen. And that feels really good. It's like, that actually feels really, really good.
I love that so much.
Yes.
I think in that, like, if we go back to what you were talking about, the masculine being the witness and the feminine being the one who experiences, when, and I'll speak from my own experience, when I feel you trusting yourself, and this could be in the bedroom, this can be outside of it, I feel safe. The part of me that goes, I don't have to hold now. I don't have to be the container. I don't have to be the witness. I don't have to, you know, be that part of this experience. I can just drop deeply into my body and deeply into my experience. That becomes possible through your self-assuredness and through your trust in yourself.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's just sexy as fuck when a man is just like so deeply trusting himself.
Totally. Yeah.
The key thing I heard in that and what you said is like, what changes? I believe the essence of what you shared there for me was, there's so many men that fear rejection or fear failure, which then stems back to like the fear of death for me. I like to get really extreme with it. Mm-hmm. But a fear of rejection or a fear of failure can hold us in that I'm not sure of myself.
Mm.
Therefore, I'm not willing to take a risk. And we, you know, one of the things that I invite men into, I'm like, where are you taking risks in your life? Where are you taking, and when I say risks, I speak into where are you performing acts of courage, because that's what taking a risk is. I'm not asking you to be chaotic or reckless with your life. You have a responsibility. So one thing that I always invite men into, I was like, where are you taking risks in an appropriate way to develop self-assuredness, to believe in yourself?
Yeah.
Because that is what will cultivate the ability to be with rejection, to be with failure, to be with tension, or to be with those moments where you are holding the seat of witness as the feminine experience is something that maybe you haven't felt comfortable with in the past. And that for me has been huge. The idea of like, where am I taking risks in an appropriate way to build more belief in self?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and those moments that the feminine craves around that is, it's like, those are the high risk moments where it's like, I know that something could go wrong here. You know, she could lose her shit at me. Right. If I mess this up, but when I'm actually in the energy, it doesn't matter. I'm not scared of that. Like I'm going there anyway. So there is a deep vulnerability, and then there is a deep courage in it, you know? And I think tyranny occurs when we like cut off from the vulnerability, but when we actually sit in the vulnerability of like, you know, this may not work. And it doesn't happen cognitively, but, you know, like, let's take it to an extreme. We're in the bedroom and it's like you reach out and grab her by the throat, right? And like actually almost cut off her air a little bit, right? In the right context, that's like a brilliant experience for a woman. In the wrong context, that's like the police are being called, right? Yeah. You are in trouble. You are exposed as an abuser. So it's a high risk scenario to engage in, right? And that's just one example of many, but I wrote recently, it's like, if we want to be in the world with feminine, and I do believe that, you know, we are coded for union, you know, that is in the human experience, we're coded for union. Some people can abstain from that. And we even say the renunciate path or the abstaining path is for those who decide not to. We have those words that demonstrates that there's something you're renunciating or there's something you're abstaining for, which is the coding for union. Then if we are in that as a man, we have to recognize that we're going to grapple with the feminine. That is going to be part of our experience. And it is grappling, right? Because she does not roll over lightly, you know? She will not ever roll over lightly. Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's like jujitsu.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. Yeah,
emotional, mental jujitsu.
Literally, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go back to that risk taking because I think, and I've been writing about this a lot lately, and I think we've spoken about it on the podcast, that it's for me, when I witness a man taking a risk, it makes me trust him more.
Yeah.
And so there is this like, yeah, that it might not land and it could be a moment in the bedroom. It could be a moment when I'm bringing my rage and Jacob decides to do like, you know, bring some lightness in or like, you know, bring us another energy in. And, you know, it, that risk and your ability to back yourself, you know, it might not always land, but it makes it, it creates such a depth of trust.
And what you're speaking to, and you've said it a couple of times now, which is, and I haven't fully ventured this out there because I can already feel the pushback that's going to happen here. I mean, I can venture it here, but I haven't ventured it in social media. It's like, it's almost like there is such a deep need for security or safety in the feminine. It's like, that's actually probably the main thing. Provision, protection, dominance, assuredness, all of these things provide a sense of safety. And I believe that safety or security is actually so she can let go and become everything and nothing. It's like, that's actually the thing. I just want to be experienced, but in order to let go, I need to know that the world is not going to kill me or destroy me or burn me at the stake, or, you know, that everything isn't going to fall apart if I let go. And it's if he can go like, no, nothing's going to fall apart, I got it. She goes, oh my God, I can let go. I can let go. Even for just a few minutes or a few hours or, you know, even like 20% more in life. It's like, okay, I'm going to be like, you know, and there's the kind of spiritual or absolute experience of this, right? And, you know, the fully letting go or the surrendering into the experience or the orgasmic one, when she lets go into an orgasm, it's an incredibly vulnerable place to be in. And then there's a more structural, right? You know, it's like when a man steps into provision, it's like, I'm going to take care of the finances and pay the rent and everything. It's like, you mean I don't have to hold that anymore? It's like my mind can let go and I can be in more creative liminal space, which is like non-linear. You know, I believe the feminine is non-linear and non-rational, not irrational, non-rational. It means it's not a predictive A plus B equals C, you know, like everything connects like this. It's quantum. It's like this could be this or this at any time, right? And that's how the feminine wants to exist. But we live in a world that needs structure and order. And it's like the more he takes that, the more she can actually be in the liminal space of that, which is like immensely creative.
I would love, and I want to circle back. You said something before about your, like when you and your partner shifted that dynamic of you being more of that like free flowing and then her business kind of falling apart. And I've had a similar journey in that me desiring more of Jacob's like unwavering masculine energy, even though I knew, oh my gosh, give that to me. That's not like click my fingers here, I can just receive that. That is such a fucking journey for a woman to meet all the layers of control she has and all the parts of her that don't feel safe to let go.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, what I work with a lot of women, and I think there are a lot of women just like pointing the finger at their man or a future partner going, you know, you need to be more masculine. You need to be more masculine, but not actually then taking responsibility for the layers of, you know, unsafety and feeling like they need to control.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, what's going to create the safety is going to be one of two things. It's going to be control or structure, right? What she's actually wanting is structure, which is the masculine pole. And she'll either structure her own life, you know, which means that she's kind of like containing herself, or she gets into a relationship and she has to start giving up the structure, which also includes giving up the control. And that is terrifying to the, to the feminine. And I think if women are not conscious of that process, it's like, there can be, like you're speaking to, an entitlement of like, you know, you need to take the structure, but I'm not going to do anything except you just have to overpower me. Well, that's a recipe to invite tyranny or collapse. Like, it's like, well, as a man, I have to non-consensually overpower you in order to impose structure over the control that you're applying. It's like, that does breed abuse, right?
Yeah.
So she has to act. There's an active surrender in the feminine. She has to go, wow, I have to give up layers of control, because otherwise then she exerts her control onto him. I need to feel safe, so I'm going to control you. And if she does that too much, she will either turn, she'll have an outcome of three things. She'll turn him into a tyrant, right? Because he would just overpower her. Some men will do that. She will turn him into a simp, where he just gives up and rolls over on his belly and goes, I can't do anything. And she's now more controlled and tightly wound than ever.
Yep.
Or he'll leave. If he's got any amount of self-respect, he'll be like, I don't want to be treated this way. I will leave. She's not entitled, or nobody is entitled, to the other person doing their work for them. It's like, she can't be like, you need to get more masculine so I can surrender to the feminine. It's like, well, if you're in a partnership, it's a co-creative process. Yes, he is developing his masculinity, but the reciprocal ad is developing femininity, which is releasing control, releasing structure, which is an active process of growth. You know, and she has to do it. She can't outsource it.
Yes. Yes. I love that so much, because it is true. You cannot bypass that process. You cannot, and it's a very fucking uncomfortable process for a woman.
Yeah.
And this, we always,
terrifying.
Totally. And it's in the body. It's in the body. And I think something that I'm so passionate about when I work with women is supporting them to clean up those micro moments where this happens in relationship. Because it's so easy to just think the control happens in these big moments, like who's running the finances, who's doing these things. But it's those like sneaky micro moments of
the
like control.
Criticism, and the little nitpickings, the little blames, you know.
Are you sure you're going to do that? Are you and being able to clean that up.
Yes.
To give a man the space to rise into his masculine power, leadership, direction. And I think a big thing in our own journey, and I'd be curious to hear your perspective on this, is like when we're talking about that evolution of polarity or evolution of relationship, is like the important ingredient of grace. It's like offering our partner, not just being like, you've got to be more masculine and just expecting them to read our fucking mind and be able to take control of every situation, but offering them the grace as they step into that role and fumble and play and take risks. And
absolutely. I mean, I think that's an important component of a relationship across the board, both directions. It's like, we're human, you know, and if I am not perfect, if I am still getting reactive, if I still have blame and victimhood in my system, if I'm still running shame through my system, if I'm doing all these things, I can't look at you and expect that you should be perfect while I'm not, because I'm actually demeaning you. I'm actually like eliminating your humanity while demanding that you respect my humanity. And that's like dehumanizing, right? So we have to give each other grace. Like, I'm growing and you're growing, and we're going to fuck up and we're going to make mistakes and we're going to have to learn from them. And whether our relationship will evolve will be determined by how much grace and how much willingness we are to fuck up and go again.
Yeah. You
know? And we have to. There's no escape from it. Everyone, we're all going to want the magic bullet, right? We're all going to want the one technique. And this is why I think a lot of people jump on polarity and go like, right, if I just learn this masculine, feminine polarity, I'll never have to deal with conflict again. I'll never have to deal with any challenges again. I'll never have to do anything. It's all going to be sorted and everything's going to be great forever. And now, but you're not doing the masculine part, or you're not doing the feminine part, and you should be doing it better, and we're failing because of you. It's like, that's not how it works, you know? And I don't believe that any relationship is going to be free if they want to grow. I think you can not grow and actually have a very tame relationship that doesn't have a lot of charge in it and not grow, and you kind of keep your distance and I'm like going to keep my inner world safe to me and you keep your inner world safe to you, and we just meet in the safe zone where we don't activate anything, but we won't grow. We might be good friends and we might have an amicable relationship, but if we want to grow, if we want to experience passion and evolution and depth and all of these things, we're going to encounter sticky spots. We're going to encounter all our shadows that we haven't integrated and all our wounds that we haven't healed yet. And then we're going to encounter all the things that we haven't grown the capacity to deal with yet as well. And all those places where I'm like, oh God, I'm in over my head and I don't actually know how to deal with this level of complexity. So I have to grow in order to deal with it. Mm. And so, yes, grace is the thing that we need to manage all of that. Yeah.
That's my favorite gene key.
Yeah.
A gene key. I listened to Richard Rudd speak about, it's got a beautiful YouTube video, it's like 15 minutes, and talks about grace. And
yeah,
the thing that with what you're saying with grace too, when we acknowledge the humanness, we can almost see beyond the trigger into the beauty.
Yes.
And the thing that we were once judging becomes the thing that we're like, oh, look at you. You're a human like me.
Yeah.
And you're doing your best. And the little nugget of gold that I always look for, the little thing that I always look for in anyone's expression, I'm like, is there an active part of them that is willing?
Yeah.
Are they willing?
Yes.
And that's always been, whether that's in sport, business, my relationship, any area of life, like, is there a willingness here? Because that is what's going to actually mean something when it comes time to make the decision. Like, am I willing to step across the line through the threshold and be in overwhelm, be in over my head, and learn in the arena? And I think that's, for me, like, a relationship isn't somewhere where I want to be like holding back. It isn't somewhere where I want to be, playing it safe.
Yeah.
And for me, that's like, oh, my programming from childhood was like, to create safety.
Yeah.
Look after your inner world. Don't let anyone in.
Yeah.
Make sure you become reliable, dependable, and everything is organized and orchestrated in a way that nothing goes wrong.
Yeah.
And then having to journey in relationship with Meg and learn that, oh, it's okay to be human,
yeah,
has been the most challenging, but also the most rewarding. Like, on the other side of it, I've felt feelings of liberation and freedom that I never knew even existed.
Yeah.
It then becomes really, I think there's a double-edged sword kind of part to that, though, is once I've had that feeling, I have to be really clear that I can't just go running around trying to get everyone else to feel what I'm feeling. And that's been something that I've had to like practice compassion once I've experienced a level of expansion, that, hey, that person may not want to expand in the way that I have, or maybe they've expanded in other ways I haven't, and their time to expand into this will come when they're ready.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that awareness piece and being capable of like staying conscious and not just getting lost in the experience is really important for me personally as a man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We're all on our journey and it never ends.
Yeah, it never ends.
Only forever.
Oh, that's always a good reminder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something I sit with all the time. Only forever. You know, and then it brings me back to humility of like, okay, well, you know, the fact that I'm being challenged by this thing is not a problem, because even if I surmount this, I'm just going to have another one. There's just going to be another challenge.
Yes.
There's going to be another task on the to-do list, and there's going to be another challenge. You know, these are the things that are unavoidable.
Something that I want to come back to is what you said about being coded for union.
Mm.
And then I think these will probably intertwine, because you just spoke then about like intimacy and relationships. You know, we're going to come face to face with our shadows. We're going to have all these pieces come to the forefront. And I see that part of the purpose of relating, or part of what we can really receive from being in union with another human, is we get to heal in a way we wouldn't outside of a relationship. But when you talk about we're coded for union, and before we pressed record as well, you spoke about co-creation.
Mm.
I'd love you to speak about that, like beyond healing, like what becomes possible when we're in union? Mm. Like, what does that co-creation aspect mean to you?
So the first thing that I want to like put, and like just another framework on the line of like, I don't know if you're familiar with Ken Wilber's work or integral theory.
No,
doesn't matter. I won't go into the big thing, but it's like, there are different domains of reality. There's a model that says there's four quadrants, and one is there's this subjective, individual subjective. So when we talk about personal development, we're talking about developing our own interior, right? As I'm deepening my masculine, I'm developing my complexity, I'm gaining new awareness about things, I'm doing meditation. And then there is a individual objective, which is actually the physical body, right? So like I can work out and I can do yoga, and I'm being quite rough around the edges with this one. And then there is a plural objective. So, you know, we are currently using a system of the internet and a camera and microphones. So there's this complex system of objects that is doing something, you know, and we live in an economic system and a governmental system, and we have transport systems and food systems and everything. But then there's also an intersubjective, which is there is a space of the between. Right? Between us. Right now, we're engaged in a conversation, we're embedded in a culture, and we're using a shared language, and there is something happening here, and we're sharing concepts and ideas that is generating something else. And there's something that is happening here that can only happen when there's more than one. Mm-hmm. You can't experience it on your own. You can't experience the intersubjective space because it is a plural subjective field. You can't experience it on your own. So in order to experience this part of reality, you need at least one other, right? And so we can do this, you know, as a group, as friends, in a culture, we're embedded inside of it. And also we can do it to the depths of intimacy with an other, with another being. And where I believe, you know, just like there is an enlightenment that exists inside of the self, there is a self-realization that can occur, and we have the great avatars, Buddha and so forth, who awakened into the experience of all is one, but they did that through their own internal experience. I believe that that's also possible in the intersubjective field, that there is an awakening that is more than one, right? There is an awakening that exists between us. And I don't know what that actually is, or what that means, right? I just know that it's there. There's something there, and you can experience it. When we're in intimacy, something happens, and there's something that can grow, and there's something that's drawing us. It's like, why do we want to be together rather than alone? Or why is this draw? It's like one of the biggest, you know, I would say, you know, that in business, they say there's like wealth, health, and relationships are the big three, right? You know, and I would say relationships, even though it's maybe not the biggest money maker, I would say it's probably the biggest concern of humanity. Mm. You know, it's more movies, more songs, more TV shows are made about relationships than anything else. More books would be written about it than anything else, I would say. So there is this coded for union. There is this desire to experience. And it's like, why? Like, why? What for? Right? And so there has to be something pulling us. There has to be some reason for it. You know, even if we're not conscious of it, we're inexorably drawn together for some purpose. You know, if we believe that the universe has purpose and meaning to it, you know, it's not just some random collision of particles. And so then to weave that into co-creation, to me, that is, it's a conscious participation with that why. It's like, okay, me and a partner, we're going to go, okay, there is something that we could experience together. If you go on a meditation path, right, and you go, okay, all right, I'm going to do some Vipassana and I'm going to start exploring the nature of my own mind, right? It's almost like a self-agreement that I'm going to go and see what's available there. This is like, okay, I'm going to see what's available with you, with another person. And we're going to go, okay, what does that mean? And how do we explore that? Right. And so that's what the co-creation is. And it doesn't quite obey the same rules as what you'd apply to yourself. You can't, it's not sitting next to each other and meditating, right? It's something else, right? And it's polarity is part of that exploration, right? I have a model that kind of unfolds different layers of it. You know, when we look at gene keys, and I'm like, interested in applying the gene keys to relational qualities rather than just individual qualities. So the co-creation is when we consciously participate with the growth of us as a couple, us as a we, right? We are growing versus I'm growing and you're growing, because I can grow and you can grow and we can do our own personal growth, but we are growing, which means that we, when we come together, when I and you come together, there is we, right? Mm. There is a we, right? And we refer to, you know, you probably get referred to as Jacob and Meg, right? Mm. I'm Damien and Katie. We refer to couples as a couple, right? Mm. And so there is a we that we actually acknowledge, that there is something that is not just either of the individuals, right? And that thing grows. That we grows. There's an increasing complexity and depth and capability and availability and attributes and qualities that start to emerge between us. And that's what the co-creation or the co-awakening or the co-exploring or whatever we want to call it process is.
I love that. I've never heard that being described in such a beautiful way.
You are all really lucky to get that, including us. Like, that was just so so well articulated. Like, I feel what you explained, I've felt,
yeah,
but I haven't been able to put into words. So, man, like, the work that you've done to be able to communicate that, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm sure all of your clients, thank you for that as well. But yeah, is that a conscious, like, for me, that almost requires a conscious co-creation. That's what I'm hearing. That co-creation is conscious.
Yes.
Because when you were sharing that, I feel like I've had moments where that has happened, that intercept where I'm like, I remember I've been driving down the highway and someone else has had the same radio station on and they're belting out the same song. We look over and all of a sudden we just share a moment. And it's like we're connected and we're co-creating a moment and it amplifies what I'm already feeling.
Yes.
And that's just a synchronicity that's happened in my, and it completely shifts the entire rest of my day. I'm floating.
Yeah.
And I've had those moments on the dance floor where someone else and I are just dancing and we're just really feeling it. But then to say, hey, listen, I want to go on a journey. I'm feeling the call to journey with you, not just in these micro moments of pure bliss, but in the gritty stuff as well. And I'm wanting to co-create and excavate everything that is in the shadow, but also, you know, enjoy the ecstasy of bliss. I want to do this with you and I want to consciously co-create with you. That is, I remember feeling like so vulnerable, like proposing to Meg. And I remember like when she walked down the aisle and when we got married, like I remember being like, holy fuck, this is me announcing to the universe that I want to co-create with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like all of the things that I've ever wanted came through this union. I was like, oh, all that I've ever wanted is not actually something I could create on my own.
Yes.
And that just like for a man who wants to be a father, that just like everything just started to wobble. Like it was like, oh, reality's starting to actually bend. Time and space are getting a little bit wobbly. But I've had visceral feelings of what you're speaking about. So thank you for putting words to that. And I really believe in that. Like for me as someone who's a hopeless romantic, has watched all the love movies, all the relationship movies and believed in that, like a lot of the things that I deeply desire come through union, come through a co-creation.
Yes.
And as much as I say I'd love to go and sit on a mountaintop for the next 20 years and just meditate, the truth is I would much rather be at a dinner table with my family, with a dog jumping up and eating the food before. there's an element of that texture that really just, I'm a yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that.
And when we acknowledge this, that there is a path of awakening that exists in the middle of us, that's not just personal. It's like then we get to be in the world in an entirely different place. We get to be in relationship in an entirely different way, right? And that's what you're saying. It's like we can be at the dinner table and it can be, you know, we can look up and I can meet my partner's eyes and it's a deeply spiritual moment, right? Because of what we've cultivated between us. And it's like our eyes meet and we share that moment and there's like something that would happen if I sat on my meditation inclusion and closed my eyes and went into myself, right? It's not the same experience, but it's comparable in the depth and potentiality of it.
Yes. That Duncan Trussell song. That's where he talks about sitting at the dinner table and he's with his family and having pancakes and then he's listening to some country music and it's this music his mum used to like. And in that moment, he just has this warped kind of like moment of like, oh my God, like everything that I've ever wanted is right here. And this is the feeling. This is the feeling. It's like, I don't need to be on a mountaintop or in the jungle drinking ayahuasca or at another personal development. I'm experiencing it in the here and now. And for me, that's what I would like to collect those moments personally. And at the end of my life, have a collection of those.
Yeah,
that's what feels really rich to me and like success and it's like those moments where through relationship I access something greater than myself.
Yeah, beautiful.
I have one final question. Do you have anything else?
No, I've been loving your questions and I'm just drinking this in, man. I'm loving so much and I love when I get to a point in my journey where I'm like, I know fucking nothing. Like that's right now. Like, I'm like, oh, I've been doing relationship stuff and I'm like, oh, I know a bit, but like right now I've just been so, yeah, man, I've been looking at you in awe and just so grateful to to be receiving all this. So my love, yeah, if you want to finish, I think we're looking at it. Yeah, we're just on time. So
yeah, I just thought a beautiful question to ask. And I know through your content, one of the pieces I saw earlier was, you know, the importance of acknowledging our differences as men and women. And, you know, we are big, you know, advocates mm-hmm. for that as well. And that, again, that has just been so supportive in our own relationship, realizing, I love the Alison Armstrong quote that your man is not a hairy woman. Like mm-hmm. that's just like my favorite ever. But I would love you to share, like, through your work with men and women, what would you say the deepest desire of men in relationship is? Mm. And also, what's the deepest yearning or desire that you see in women?
I mean, the first word that comes to mind is adoration. And I actually think it goes both ways, right?
Yeah,
I feel that. Like, I think the quality of adoration is slightly different in how it flows. But I think as a man, it's like an acknowledgement. It's like, I can feel in myself, the more I step into like service of my woman, my family, it's the acknowledgement of how meaningful that actually is that actually I crave. You know, it's like, I am doing this for you. And the only thing that I want in return is for you to go, thank you for doing this. And I'm like, oh God, yeah, that feels so good. You know, there's like and that just has me want to do it even more. Like there's just like a deep acknowledgement or adoration for my desire to serve her.
Yeah.
You know, and then that becomes this feeding. And I would say it's similar the other direction, but I would say it's almost like the masculine wants to be adored and acknowledged for what he does. And the feminine wants to be ignored and acknowledged for who she is. It's kind of like just to be seen in all her creative, radiant beauty. It's like, oh my God, you're just gorgeous, right? Just because you are, and you're creative, and I just enjoy the way that you are. And then she's like, oh God, yeah, I can like shine even more. You start feeding her with that and she actually starts to glow, right? You know, we have that, mm-hmm. you know, and you can see it. You can see a woman in the street who's sometimes, you know, I love the expression well fucked, but it doesn't necessarily mean just physical. She's being well loved and she glows, right? She glows, she radiates, you know, and so I would say, and then a man who's being deeply acknowledged, his like feet get deeper into the ground and his spine gets up and he's like, I know what I'm doing in the world. And he's like, you know, I've got it all handled. So it's like feeding and the beautiful part, like the most beautiful part of that is that like the thing that we, how to put this? It's like to be acknowledged and adored and respected in that way gives the very thing that she is wanting to feel from me. So she gives that to me and she gets more of what she wants and vice versa, right? It's like, and that's the beautiful thing. And that's when I alluded to right at the beginning, there's constructive and destructive polarities, right? And that's a constructive polarity, which means it's a self-feeding feedback loop. It's a positive feedback loop in that it creates more and more and more and more. And all polarities that have that generative aspect to them create more, right?
Yeah. I just keep seeing the infinity symbol of like it feeding back and forth. It's just like, yeah, as I acknowledge, adore and adore you, I then become more of what feeds you.
Yes.
And then I'm able to give you more of that, which then when I acknowledge and adore you, you are able to give me more of what you love, what you're cultivating anyway. So it's this, for me, I just see this infinity. I feel like that when constructive polarity, it creates the energy that is infinite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's infinitely generative. It when we get it right, we tap into an energy source that is infinite. It doesn't run out, which is so cool.
Yeah. Oh, and that way of relating, I think it's a totally different paradigm. It's literally like you step into a new paradigm of relationship, because the whole field and just like texture of your relationship shifts. Mm-hmm. And I think so what I see, which is so common, and again, I work with so many women, is no, I can't respect him yet. I can't offer him that yet. I'm just going to point out all the things he needs to do first.
It breaks my heart when I start hearing that, because I'm like,
too.
It's like if you want more from your man, find all the ways that he's doing it right and feed them, put more energy into them.
Oh my God.
And the map to the masculine is kind of simple in that way. It's like, he's like, you tell him what he's doing well and he'll do more of it.
Yeah.
Right. He just will. Like, it's like, oh, that felt good. I did that thing and she liked that. So I'll do more of it. You tell him what he's doing wrong and he'll go, well, I'm not doing anything right. So I'll just kind of stop trying.
Yeah, man,
and
we'll tap the fuck out.
We just go, right, I'm just checking out. I can't even be bothered anymore. It's just not working, right? You want to destroy a relationship, spend more time focusing on what the man's doing wrong and he will give up and he will again become a simp or he'll leave. Right? One of the two, you know, and you break a man that way.
Completely. I get quite ruthless with women around this because I'm like, if you cannot find anything to respect,
don't celebrate, be with him.
I was like, get the fuck out.
Leave him alone.
Let another woman come in that can
let a woman who wants to like him be close to him, you know, don't destroy him to try and feel safe yourself.
Uh-huh. And when you feel that is, you're right. It's like, it's literally like tapping into this magic key when you start feeding your man in that way and vice versa to a woman. When a woman starts to feel celebrated for her full spectrum and her full self, there is a blooming and an aliveness that happens on both ends that, it literally feels like you're just tapping into this. Oh my God, why didn't anyone tell me about this?
A little secret code.
Totally.
It's a cheat code. If there was a magic pill, a magic bullet, a magic solution, that would be it.
Oh, completely.
But you have to work at it.
Yeah.
It's not given to you. You actually have to work at it because the default habits of like, I'm going to default to criticism and nitpicking. I'm going to default to kind of trying to control you or diminish you. They are wired in hard a lot of the time. And so we have to actively untrain ourselves and repattern ourselves into something else.
Yes.
That's why the human, like the grace and the humanness and the one thing that we give everyone that comes and works with us or asks us questions, like honor that you're both human.
Yes.
And start to understand these things. But like if you do tend to fall into that projection and you become aware of it, you can ask your partner, can I have another go at that?
Yeah.
And like that has saved us so many fucking times because we still have those programs in us that even though we want to love, I want to love you better and I want to be the most amazing, perfect lover, there's still going to be parts of me that mess that up.
Mm-hmm.
And by saying, can I have another go at that? And having that willingness, that leaning back in and then understanding these dynamics, man, it's a recipe for like that, that infinite energy. And that's exciting.
Yeah. We have the same thing. Can we clean the slate clean and just like, but like, okay, that hurt. We've got all of these hurts that we just did to each other. Can we agree to let it all go and just not hold on to any of it and go again? Mm-hmm. And it's like being willing to do that. And again, it's an active principle, you know, it's an active process. It's like resentment will fester if you keep feeding it. It's like, okay, well, I have to just let go of all of it and I want you to forgive me. And I have to forgive you. It's like, I can't be like, you forgive me, but I'm going to hold on to a little bit of resentment over here. It's like, no, we got to drop it all, drop it all and go, okay, let's go again. Actually in service of love. Okay. I'm feeling a bit raw and tender, but I'm going to lean in and love you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to give my love and I'm going to put the love in until actually it starts. The engine will kick on it again at some point. It might take a little while, but at some point it goes boom and suddenly we're like, oh, we're buzzing again and we can't keep our hands off each other and we're having sex all the time and everything feels really good. It'll happen. You put the positive energy in, it will happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I've loved this conversation.
I feel like in 6 months' time, I'm going to be like, Damien, you ready for round two? I feel like there's so much that I want to keep deepening into, but
maybe we can bring Katie next time.
Definitely. Yes.
That'd be epic.
Oh, that would be, we could do it. Yes.
Yeah.
We'll get another mic.
I have a mic.
Oh, you got a mic? Yeah. I was going to say, I'm keep on like ransacking all my mates' stuff, but man, I'm super grateful for this conversation for me personally and for everyone that's listening. This is a much deeper dive into polarity and energetics and what I feel really is the essence of this work that I've learned through David Data and John Wineland and that I've really just felt in my bones. So thank you for being another man that I trust and I'm deeply respect for bringing through your beautifully articulate transmission, bro. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me.
And where can people find you? And have you got any upcoming things that you'd love to tell people about and invite people into?
Yeah, people can find me. If you go to evolverelating.com, you can sign up for my mailing list there. That's the easiest way to get access to everything. I'm on Instagram at evolverelating, Facebook. I write longer form on Facebook. And the thing that's really the most alive is I have a membership. And that's the thing that everything is funneling towards right now. And the real intent of that is to be in an ongoing developmental process. So the way it works is that every 2 weeks we go into a new topic and we spend 2 weeks on things. And so I cover my framework is self, which is nervous system regulation and boundaries, other, which is the way we communicate, how we actually relate to each other. It's like if we don't have our communication down, it's like the other things fall down. And so they kind of build on top of each other. And then there's bonding, which is really about how we attach and our nervous systems are wired to bond. And then there's polarity and then there's awakening and they kind of build into each other. And I weave between all of them there. And so we're in a non-linear progression. So it's like, how do we balance the masculine and feminine, be non-linear? So it's non-hierarchical. You don't have to do this before this. It all unfolds interwoven with each other, but we also have structure and cadence.
Yeah.
Amazing. And that's for both men and women and
couples.
Okay.
Yeah. Men, women and couples. Yeah.
Amazing.
And they find that on at evolverelating.com.
Evolverelating.com. There's awesome. Up the top, there's a little membership thing. You know, you can look there. And it's about to go through a little rebrand, but I don't know when this will be out. So it might have happened by then.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you so much. This conversation was so epic. I'm so excited for people to listen.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much, bro. Big love, family.
Bye, everyone.
Yo, yo, yo. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Sex, Love, and Everything in Between. Now, if you'd like to stay connected with Meg and I, you can head on over to Instagram and follow me at the Jacob O'Neill. And where can people find you, lover?
At v.meg.o.
Amazing. And yeah, guys, check out the show notes for all other information in regards to what we've got coming up. And yeah, we're super, super grateful that you guys have taken the time to listen in to this podcast. If you do have any topics or any questions, like I said, hit us up on Instagram and we'll see what we can do. Apart from that, have a beautiful, beautiful rest of your day.
Thanks for being here.
Big, big love.